they stay there. And they say yeah. And they say there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you go in it, put your hands in the air, make them stay there.
It's your champ, the voice. Don't ever count me out, cause I'm always in the matchup. Drop 70, I still ain't going nowhere. Turn that pressure up, and where others fail, I step up. Al Davis said it best, just win, baby, win. Let's get to it. Episode 93 coming at you. Welcome back to another episode, and in week 14, it was a crazy week for scoring. It started off with Embiid dropping 70. Cat went on to score 62 on Monday night. Then Friday, they were upstaged by Luka scoring 73 and Devin Booker scoring 62. And it's just funny because I'm watching Sam Mitchell on Game Time, and he was basically like, you got to score 70 to win because 60 not cutting it. Oh, man, because really, both Cat and Booker, they scored 62 in losing efforts. But when you think about the fact that they both scored in 62 in a matchup that they lost, I will say that Booker's 62 seemed more in the flow of the game. And here's what Coach Finch had to say about Karl-Anthony Towns' performance.
I mean, listen, yeah, you're spot on. I mean, there's lots of times when just because you've scored two or three or four points in a row or baskets in a row, doesn't, you know, obviously we're going to try to feed a hot hand, look for a hot hand. But at some point, we got to get back to making the right play. We got to get back to doing the right things. Like I said, there's a lot of ways to be immature. There's always a lot of ways to be immature. And there was a lot of immature performances here throughout the roster. We totally disrespected the game, ourselves, and we got exactly what we deserved.
And, you know, he went on to say that Carl was hunting and it just kind of dried up on them and they just weren't playing the basketball that they were supposed to be playing. Kind of reiterated that they were being disrespectful to their opponent and to the game. Booker, however, on the other hand, like I said, he was playing within the flow of the offense, but he's been on an absolute just heater since, I'm assuming, he heard the comments that Austin Rivers made on his podcast, The Off Guard. Here's what Austin had to say about Devin Booker and his scoring ability.
The Devin Booker 70-point game is ridiculous. It doesn't even count. Yeah. They're down like third. I don't even know.
Well, given his age and everything like that, and that was kind of his woke. That was like his like, all right, I'm up here with these guys.
No. Again, 70 points is a lot of points. I'm not trying to talk shit. I'm just, that 70-point game was not the same as Donovan Mitchell and Joel Embiid 70-point game. I don't care what anybody says. They were down 20 or 30, man.
Yeah.
You understand that? So they weren't even trying to win the game. Jay Crowder got into it with them after the game. They're like, y'all were down 30.
Yeah.
They were fouling on purpose so they could get the ball back so he could continue to try to go score.
That's obviously a little different than what Joel had going on.
Yeah, Joel like just in a game scoring and then like chilling on some plays or Donovan Mitchell really trying to win the game in overtime is totally different from your team being down 30 and everybody on your team, every time the other team comes down, you're like fouling or making like BS kind of defensive plays or playing Ole defense so you can get the ball back quick to see how much Devin can score.
Yeah.
That was nasty basketball. It wasn't a good 70. With that being said, 50 of it was real. He had like a legitimate 55-60.
And it's just funny listening to that because the day that episode dropped was the day before Booker scored 62. So it really felt like somebody must have got those words to Booker and Booker's like, oh, okay. You think my 70 was trash? Let me show you. I can go out there and get 70. So he didn't quite get 70, but scored 62 that night. The night after the podcast, or the next game, really, after the podcast, which was only a day apart from when the podcast dropped. And I know players always talking about they not listening, but obviously somebody listening somewhere. We had a good amount of NBA news that happened in week 14. And we start off with the Terry Rozier trade. He got traded to Miami for Kyle Lowry and picks. Now, Charlotte, they publicly stated that they don't intend on having Lowry suit up for them. And there's been a lot of speculation around the Hornets squad that they're not really done making moves. Miles Bridges, Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington, they all have a trade market around them. And it sounds like Charlotte would be willing to field offers. Now, Bridges is a little bit of an exception.
Nerd alert!
Because he signed his qualifying offer with the Hornets in July, he has the right to basically veto any trade this season that involves him. And that's because if the Hornets trade him to another team, his bird rights won't come with him to the new team that he plays on. And bird rights are important from a money standpoint because they allow the team to sign a player over the cap, which means even if Charlotte offers Miles Bridges his max contract coming up this summer and it takes him over the cap, it's okay. They're allowed to do that within the rules. But if he goes to a non-bird right team, now he can only get paid up to 120% of his previous salary. And remember, he signed basically like an $8 million salary in July with the Hornets. So basically, long story short, if somebody else were to sign him that didn't have his bird rights, he could probably get about $14, $15 million a year on his contract, annual raises of 5%. If he stays with Charlotte, he can get somewhere $25 million or so with 8% raises. So all that's to say is Miles Bridges needs to make up for some money lost after having to basically sit out last season due to his allegations or his charges for battery. And that man ain't going nowhere that's going to mess up his money. So I'm not really worried about Miles Bridges losing fantasy value this season because Charlotte's going to trade him to a team where he's in a lower or lesser role. I'm almost positive Bridges is not going to let that happen. Almost positive about that. Either way, I know I went off on a tangent, but nothing really changes for Charlotte. Yes, Brandon Miller, he has been playing better. But in his last seven games, he's averaged 20.4 points, 5 rebounds, and 2.6 three-pointers made at 38%. So the opportunity has really always been there for Miller because most of the season, he's been playing without LaMelo Ball in the lineup. So he's kind of been the second or third option most of the season anyway. So Terry Rozier leaving doesn't really open up that much more opportunity. Is this the fact that Miller is just kind of finding his footing in the NBA finally? For Terry Rozier, the move to Miami clogs things up. You look at the shot attempts, and Tyler Hero, he was averaging 18.9 field goals attempts prior to the trade. In the last four games, he's only shooting 16.3. Bam Adebayo, his shots have dropped also. They went from 15.7 to 13.5. But Jimmy Butler's, he's kind of stayed relatively consistent. He was shooting 13.5 field goal attempts prior to the trade. And since Terry Rozier has been there, he's been shooting 13.3. So there's been some sacrifice all around with Terry Rozier coming to the lineup. But for Terry Rozier personally, he's been awful. He's averaging 11.8 points, 4.5 assists, and 1.5 three-pointers made at 35%. And even if, let's say, Hero goes to the bench, I don't see it getting too much better because you got Jimmy, you got Bam, Hero, they all like the balls in their hand and they're used to initiating the offense for Miami. And you could probably say, hey, well, Hero, he probably needs to be a little bit more like Klay Thompson and a little less like Donovan Mitchell. He can take the ball out of his hands and he can still be effective. He just really needs to get them shots up and knock down open shots, keep the offense spread out for guys like Butler and Rozier to drive to the hoop. But even if Hero is less of a ball dominant guy, you still got Jimmy, you still got Bam, that they like to handle the ball. So it's hard for me to have confidence that the assists will get back into that 6-plus range that he was averaging in Charlotte. I think he probably stays around that 4.5 assists that he's already at. But I do see a path for him to be a little bit better. He's not going to get the 18 attempts that he was getting in Charlotte. That's not happening with everybody that he's playing with now. But he's currently at 12 to 13 shots, and that seems about right. His career, he's a 42% shooter. And let's say he can get up to 44 this season because his last few seasons he's been shooting around 44, 45%. In Miami, he's shooting 38%. And again, if he can get that up to about 44, now you're looking at a guy that's averaging 15 to 16 points with 4.5 assists. It's not terrible. It's not what you signed up for when you drafted Rozier, but not bad. He's still a useful fantasy player. And the great thing about the NBA is you got to let things play out because everybody, including myself, when the Harden trade went down, it looked terrible for the Clippers. It looked terrible for fantasy. But now they're getting settled in and it's much better all around. It's much better for real life. Clippers are on a winning streak. They're moving up in the standings, right behind first place right now. I think like a few games back. And for fantasy, James Harden is playing well. Yeah, he's not a 20-point scorer anymore, but he's averaging like 9.5 assists. Still knocking down about 2.5 threes. Really, the biggest difference for Harden is he's just not getting to the free throw line as much anymore. The point is, things can work themselves out. And I was just on here a few podcasts ago applauding how good of a coach Spo was. So let's see what he's able to cook in the kitchen and see if he can get this thing working together well. Milwaukee, they fired their coach, Coach Adrian Griffin. They hired Doc Rivers. And just like everybody else in the league chat, I thought this was a dumb move by the Bucks organization. Cool, okay, you want to fire Adrian Griffin because the players don't respect him? I can follow that logic. I understand it. But if you're going to say, hey, we got championship expectations, then now you lose me when you talk about we're making a decision to hire Coach Doc. But I had a chance to sit on it, think about it. And who else were they going to hire in the middle of the season? Like, if you want to win a championship, I'm not calling Dwayne Casey. I'm not calling Nate McMillan. You just fired Budenholzer, and I doubt you want to swallow your pride and go bring him back. So I don't really know who you're calling. I hear about Sam Cassell, and everybody says that he's going to break through at some point. But that's another guy that's going to be a first-time head coach if you hired him. So if you look at it through those lens, I guess Doc was probably the best option out there. And, you know, I felt that his players and him have choked big moments. I think he has the most blown 3-2 leads of any coach or whatever the case may be. But I got to admit, he probably is an upgrade over Adrian Griffin. So if you look at it that way, I guess this was the best they could do. Just got to roll with the punches, see what happens. For fantasy, though, I don't really think this changes much. You probably expect that you get a little bump for that first month or so because everybody's going to just be playing harder to prove that, hey, wasn't our fault. See, it was the coach. You know what I'm saying? If you put a better coach in us, we could have been winning games. So I expect that you're going to see maybe a bump of stats across the board, but that's just going to be like that little honeymoon period where everybody's trying to do their job and execute the assignment. Then there was a weird story that kind of came out early in the week. I believe it came out on Monday. And Tristan Thompson was suspended 25 games for violating the anti-doping rules. I bring it up just because it was crazy to me because I'm just like, man, Tristan Thompson was basically out of the league a year ago, making guest appearances on NBA Today. And then LeBron basically threw him a lifeline for the playoffs. And to be fair to Tristan, this season, he's been streamable at certain points of the year. But the first thing I thought about when I saw this news was like, oh, okay, I get it. That's why he threw a little tantrum in the Paris game. That's why he got thrown out. He was on that road rage, man. So, yeah, Tristan Thompson out for 25 games. Nothing to do there. Just kind of funny that Tristan Thompson is using PEDs. In Washington, Wes Unseld Jr., he's out as the Wizards coach. He moves to the front office. The Wizards have installed assistant Brian Keefe as the interim coach. Wizards, they've been trash all season. They will continue to be trash. There's no coaching change that's going to fix that. I don't think there's any real changes that you can apply to fantasy. Again, maybe you get a little bit of a bump for the first month or so just because there's a coaching change. But at this point, it is what it is with the Wizards. And on the sillier side of things, there's going to be a Steph Curry.
He's driving me crazy. Steph Curry and the Warriors.
And Curry will be facing Sabrina Ionescu in a three-point contest. And it was funny watching the little hot mic segment that was on TNT. Because Steph insinuates that, hey, I'm going to have it to challenge Sabrina during the All-Star because she set the record for the most three-pointers made in a competition. And I'm sure that's one of those things where the conspiracy theorists will point out, see, I told you, that NBA and NFL, I told you they were scripted. But anyways, you know, bit of viral marketing that the NBA tried to do there. I feel like, hey, go ahead, throw it in Friday night somewhere between that rookie sophomore mini tournament that they have where they got the four teams of seven. You know, it doesn't really matter wherever they put it. It's something new. I'm going to watch it because it's something new. I guess my biggest thing is, are they going to do multiple rounds? Is it this one round, see who's hot. Because sometimes, you know, with a three-point contest, you got guys that come out there, they ice cold, and, you know, only make 8 or 10 points in a three-point contest. That's like, you know, so I'm hoping that that doesn't happen between Curry and Sabrina, that they at least can get to about 30 or so, both of them. That'd be nice. Well, actually, 30 is extremely high. So if they can get to about 22, 25, that's probably going to be an entertaining little matchup. But if they're both cold, for it to only be one round would be like, be a little disappointing. So we'll see how they do it. But something new, something interesting to watch. And speaking of All-Star, the All-Star starters were announced. For the East, it was Giannis, Embiid, Tatum, Tyrese Haliburton, and Lillard. And I'm with Sir Charles Barkley on this one. I really think Brunson should be a starter. Brunson, to me, is having the better individual season. And the Knicks are a good enough team that you can't say that you're not rewarding somebody from a winning team. I know that the Bucks are higher than them in the standings, but it's not enough separation to me to say because Lillard is higher in the standings than Brunson that Lillard should be started. Now, granted, I get it. Lillard needs to be kind of grandfathered in to starting because I don't think he's ever got a start in the Western Conference just because the Western guards is just always too deep on that side. But at this point, again, I really think Brunson has been having the better season. In the West, we got Bron.
LeBron James.
KD, Joker, Luka, and SGA. You give me truth serum, that would probably make me say that AD probably deserves to start over LeBron, but we talking about LeBron James, you know, so I really don't care that he's been kind of grandfathered into the starting lineup. It's kind of hard to not put him there when he's still excelling statistically. I know the Lakers are trash, but he's still playing above and beyond. But let me know if you guys would make any changes to the starting lineups for the All-Star game. And finally, to close this out, got to close it out with my newest man crush. Quick side note to Wemby, Wembanyama. He is now playing in back-to-backs. And I know Varus was out there trying to calm the masses down. Me and Chase a few weeks ago talking about, you know, Wemby's not even playing back-to-backs. Calm down, calm down. But the man is playing back-to-backs now. The hype is real. Plus, his minutes are going up too. So before I nerd out and give you the stats.
Nerd alert!
Just imagine what he could accomplish in 34 to 36 minutes a night. So let's look at it. He's been playing back-to-backs now. In Wemby's last 7 games, he's been playing 28 minutes a night. Only 28. Hasn't even broke 30 yet. It's tracking up, but hasn't even broke 30 yet. And in those 28 minutes a night, he's been averaging 25.7 points, 9.6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1 steal, 3.1 blocks. Let me say that again for you. 3.1 blocks and 1.9 three-pointers made at 35% while shooting 52% from the field on 18.6 attempts. Get the fuck out of here if you don't think this man going to be picked in the top 5 next year. I don't want to hear it. This man Wemby, he ain't even learned how to get to the line and get his superstar calls yet. So imagine in the near future when Victor Wembanyama, when he starts making 8+ free throws a game, he's already shooting 80% from the charity stripe. So when he starts getting a high volume of free throws added to his diet, he's going to be scoring 30 in his sleep, basically. He's going to be sleepwalking to 30. Plus you get all the peripheral stats. Plus he's going to be one of those centers that probably hover around 4 to 5 assists a night, which for a center is excellent. I mean... Come on. Come on. We all see it. There's no calming this train. There's no slowing this train down. But I don't know if I'm going to take him with the first pick next season. But I'm going to be considering it. Just to let y'all know, I will be considering it. Let's go ahead and take a look at the injuries that happened in week 14. And this was a slow week for injuries, so that's always a good thing. Well, at least it was a slow week for injuries of players that are missing multiple games. And we start off with Kyrie Irving. January 24th, it was announced that he was going to miss games, and he's missed 4 games now due to a thumb injury. I first thought this injury, it must be benefiting Tim Hardaway Jr. But I look at his stats, he's been having a good season in general. With Kyrie, without Kyrie, with Luka, without Luka. And really, over these last 4 games, he's been getting the same amount of shots, even with Kyrie out the lineup. Then I was like, okay, well, Josh Green's got to be the next guy up then. And yeah, he's gotten a few more shots, but he's really a 3-point specialist at best to stream. So when I really just kind of looking at who's been producing more by Kyrie out, the injury is helping Luka going apeshit. Even if you exclude the 73 points he just dropped, in the games without Kyrie this season, Luka is carrying the Mavs. He's averaging 35.4 points, 9 rebounds, 11.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 0.9 blocks, and 3.9 three-pointers made at 36%. And again, that's excluding the 73 he just dropped. The other injury that looks like it's going to be long-term, well, it will be long-term, is Patrick Williams. On January 28th, it was announced that he's going to be missing or reevaluated in 2 weeks due to a foot injury. And this will give the Bulls a chance to go small. And I would be looking at Ayo Dosunmu as my guy that I want to pick up off the free agency. I know we talked about him in the last episode when we covered the Zach LaVine injury. But this new injury to the florist Patrick Williams, it just solidifies that Dosunmu is going to be getting some opportunity. And we'll go ahead and take a quick break here. When we get back, we'll get into the league news. And of course, we had some trades that happened in the DHL, so we'll have to fire up that good old trade machine. Around the world to end the league news. We start off with a few trades that we had in week 14. So let's go ahead, crank up that trade machine. The first trade was between Aubin and Too Legit. And the two of them, they swapped centers. I ain't worried about nothing, sent Walker Kessler to Too Legit in exchange for Yusuf Nurkic. And this is one of those rare trades between managers that were in an actual active matchup against each other. It's kind of like selling a gun to somebody and then getting shot by it. So people don't normally like to make a trade with a manager that they're in a current matchup with. But either way, the true essence of this trade, Aubin, he's trading away upside for consistency. If you haven't noticed, Nurkic has been incredibly healthy this season. He's only missed 3 games. And because Phoenix has built their squad kind of stars and scrubs roster, Nurkic's playing time is unlikely to be subject to any change. And that's a big difference when you compare him to Kessler, whose minutes kind of go up and down, 32, 25, 15, 16. It's just a much harder game to predict what Kessler's going to do on any given night. On top of that, statistically, Nurkic does more than Kessler in the points category, 11.5 to 8.5. In the rebounding category, 10.3 to 7.4. And Nurkic is averaging a solid 3.5 assists as a center to Kessler's 0.8. Also, the steals are kind of significant because Nurkic, he's averaging 1 steal a game compared to Kessler's 0.5 steals. So even if you want to throw points out of there because 11.5 to 8.5, that's not really a significant difference. The rebounding, the assists, and steals, those all far and away go to Nurkic over Kessler. But to be fair to Too Legit, they get a significant boost in field goal percentage and blocks by bringing in Walker Kessler. And I understand why he swapped out the 3 categories for 2. Before this trade happened, he probably saw the update that Mobley was coming back. And since he was going to be returning soon, I feel like Too Legit was like, okay, even if I give up some rebounds here, I'm going to make up for that with Mobley back in the lineup. But really what Too Legit's probably trying to do here is, hey, he has Holmgren on his team. And now if he pairs Kessler with Holmgren, nobody's going to beat him in the blocks category going forward. And I get that. I love having a category that I know I can count on. Don't matter what I do, I'm going to go ahead and lock that category up quick against my opponents. But it does feel like a bit of an overkill. If you look at the stats before the trade, Too Legit had gone 10-3 in the block category this season. 10-3, that's excellent. You just look at the raw numbers, the counting stats for the blocks. This season, Too Legit is first, ranked number one in that category with 411 blocks. So what I'm saying is, what Too Legit kind of set out to do with this trade, he was already doing. He didn't really have to go and find extra to add to it. He was already dominating the category. He was already blowing out people most weeks in that category. So when I look at it that way, I'd rather have the versatile stat line from Nurkic. But again, I want to try to be fair to Too Legit. This trade blocks now. It should just be a ridiculous effort that his opponents are going to need to beat him in that category. For Aubin, I really believe this trade was simply down to I could trust Nurkic more than I could trust Kessler. I really don't think I ain't worried about nothing, thought anything more about it than that. The second trade was more of a blockbuster trade in the DHL, and that was between Cradle and Rocket Red. Cradle packaged Jason Tatum and Austin Reeves to Rocket Red for Kevin Durant. I really don't like this trade for Cradle so much. I feel like it was the wrong target to go after. And I get the underlying reason that he probably made this trade. Tatum, he's playing for Boston right now, and they'll probably be cruising to the playoffs as the number one seed in their conference. And the likelihood of Tatum, Jaylen Brown, we already see them doing it with Porzingis and Al Horford. And they might even start doing it with Derek White and Drew Holiday. But basically what they're doing is alternating rest days for those players. And there's a strong likelihood that Brown and Tatum, when the season starts getting down to the end in April and late March, that, hey, we've already got first place locked up. If there's any type of back-to-back or, you know, maybe two games in 3 nights, maybe one player plays one game, rest the next game. And they just alternate like that. So I think that was a little bit in the decision-making to get off of Tatum for Cradle. Because now he brings in a guy in Durant who his team is basically going to be fighting to the end to stay out of that play-in mix. And I'm sure some of y'all are saying, okay, well, if that was his motive, then why do you include Austin Reeves in the trade? Because the Lakers, they are fighting for their basketball lives now. And they're going to be fighting all the way to the end too, really probably just to be in the play-in. And it looks like the Lakers are really probably hoping just to have home court advantage during the play-in. And I would respond to that, that's true, but Reeves is not a top-end talent like Tatum or Durant. So having Durant play to the end is way more impactful than Reeves playing to the end. Even with understanding that logic, I still really don't like the fit for Cradle's team. In the last episode, we heard Cradle talk about wanting to get defensive stats. But Cradle in this trade, he gives up the better rebounder in Tatum, and both Reeves and Tatum are averaging a steal. So there's a net loss in that category as well. Now we're talking defense. Cradle still does get a significant boost in blocks with Durant averaging 1.3 blocks this season. But Durant's 1.3 blocks on Cradle's team is still not impactful enough to be truly competitive in that category. So it really doesn't move the needle there. But I guess you got to start somewhere if you want to make a change in that. Either way, when you look at Durant's greatest strengths when it comes to fantasy, it's percentages. And I feel like bringing Durant to this squad just takes a massive shit on what he does great and for fantasy.
Nerd alert!
All right, let's do some quick maths. Just because I want you to get an idea of how muted Durant's talents could be on Cradle squad. We'll start off with the field goal percentage. You got Durant shooting 53% on 19.1 field goal made, on 19.1 field goal attempts. You got Bam Adebayo 50% on 15.3 attempts. and De'Aaron Fox, 47%, which is pretty good for a guard, on 20.7 attempts. So not bad when you add those three up. So add that up, average it. You got 50% on 55.1 attempts average as a collective group for those three. But uh-oh, here comes that Trae Young. And he's shooting 42% on 19.7 attempts. Throw that into the mix, that drops the collective average down to 48%. That's a full 2%. And it might not sound like a lot, but in this league, that is a massive drop. That drops you from a top three team in the field goal percentage category to ninth. And Trae Young, he is not a Jordan Poole. He's not a guy that you're going to sit on your bench and only play when you have to or when you're in a pinch. He's too good to just play him in a pinch. So if you're going to have to play Trae Young, you're going to have to play Durant. You're going to have to combine those two averages. I don't like the combination of Durant and Ice Trae together, just kind of erasing each other's effect, basically. Then you look at the free throw percentage. Major players for Cradle, you got Durant knocking down 87% on 6.6 free throw attempts. Ice Trae, he's shooting 86% on 8.3 attempts. That's beautiful. Let's do some quick maths again. Collectively, you got 87% on 14.9 attempts when you add those two up. But, uh-oh, we got other players that we count on that we got to play every time they're in the game. And so now we got to go ahead. This time we got to add Bam. Bam Adebayo shooting 78% on 6.9 free throw attempts. Fox, 73% on 6.8 attempts. Add those ingredients into the gumbo. And now your percentage has dropped from 87% to 81. Again, if it doesn't sound like a lot, it is. That's 6 full percent. That would take Cradle from being projected number one, first in the free throw made category, and it would take him all the way down to 7th. And that doesn't even include guys like a Jared Johnson or a Jared Allen that Cradle counts on also. Now Cradle, he's an experienced manager, has 6 championships under his belt. So, of course, I expect him to figure out how to manipulate his rotations and take advantage of all his players' strengths. For Rocket Red, kind of looking at those same categories, he's been one of the best teams in the league for free throw percentage. Only 3 players on his squad shoot less than 80% from the charity stripe, and one of those players is an add drop slot, so don't even throw that third person in there. You bring in Austin Reeves, 87% on 3.4 free throw attempts, and Tatum, 81% on 7.2 attempts, they fit right in on the squad. The field goal percentage, however, that's another story. That's a category that Rocket Red has basically punted this whole year. You got Fred VanVleet, 41% from the field on 13.7 field goal attempts. Jalen Green, 41% on 15 attempts. Jordan Clarkson, 42% on 15.2 field goal attempts. Klay Thompson, 42% on 14.5 attempts. Malik Monk, 43% on 11.3 field goal attempts. That's 5 players. That's 5 players that shoot in the low 40s, and they shoot volume. So Rocket Red, whether he had Durant or not, whether he has Tatum, whoever he puts on his squad, he doesn't need to make any decisions on whether a player helps or hurts his field goal percentage. That is a non-starter for Rocket Red. He does not, that category doesn't even exist for him. Honestly, it might have been better for him to trade for a Trae Young rather than the Tatum, because even though he doesn't have to pay attention to field goal percentages when he's making decisions, just knowing that, hey, this terrible field goal percentage doesn't even bother my squad, it doesn't hurt me, kind of makes Trae Young a little bit more important for somebody like Rocket Red than it does for Cradle. So for Rocket Red, I really do like this trade. You get somebody back in Tatum that's kind of in the same realm, at least, as KD. And you get a solid role player in Austin Reeves that just gives you excellent roster flexibility because he's eligible to be slotted at the point guard, shooting guard, and small forward positions. Other than that, there was no real debates in the league chat during week 14. Just a little bit of minor trash talk back and forth, a few jokes. But I do want to take some time to make sure that everybody saw the post for the vote. And this vote is to see if you guys wish to move from the waiver priority that we're currently using to the FAAB, free agency acquisition budget. And we've kind of been talking about this over the last two podcasts, so now it's time to go ahead and just put it to a vote, see what you guys feel. The poll, again, will be up to the end of the week. As always, for proposals that have to do with future rule changes that affect the way we play the game, it will take an overwhelming majority to pass this, and that will take 10 votes for this proposal to get passed. So please visit the league chat, make your official vote. If you can't find it, go ahead and click on the little pin icon. It should be under the pin messages. You can vote there. Voting closes on Monday, February 5th at 10:25 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's go ahead and take a look at the league standings. We're finally starting to see some separation in the standings. In the top, we have the top eight teams that are in their own bracket. Then we have teams 9 through 11 in their own little grouping. 12 and 13 kind of make up that third tier. And then, of course, in the grouping all to himself is Proof in last place. So let's go ahead and take a closer look at these standings coming out of week 14. At the top of the standings, SD Star Sprinkles stays at the top of the standings for the third week in a row after a 7-6 victory over Tank Management. That is now 5 wins in a row for the SD Star Sprinkle team. Largest movement up belongs to I Ain't Worried About Nothing. After their blowout win over Too Legit, that moves them all the way up from 6th to 2nd in the standings. Largest movement down, that dishonor belongs to OE, who dropped from 2nd to 5th after suffering an 8-4-1 loss to his nemesis, really one of his nemesis, Elhan. And I really think that OE probably has the most nemesis in the DHL, because Pep, Irrelevant, Elhan, probably all equal nemesis for OE. At the bottom of the standings, though, we have Team Proof. And I was a little disappointed here because, not at the fact that he's at the bottom, we knew that he was going to be staying at the bottom for a while, but he had control of his matchup going into Sunday, and he basically let Horseman outwork him. And Horseman, he made 2 late adds to fill out his roster on Sunday, while Proof, he just stood still. But I will say, if you're going to lose, losing 6-7, that's probably the best way to go down. A few weeks ago, Cradle was on the podcast and he asked, how could Proof make up 13 games? How can you even see a way? Well, what I can say is there is a possibility. He's gone from being 13 games behind Swiper to 10.5 just in 2 weeks. Proof, he really might have a chance here with 7 weeks left in the season. And hear me out. I know y'all probably think I'm tripping. But Swiper is starting to do Swiper-type things. So if you look at Swiper's matchup, on Monday, he left 2 20-point performances on the bench at the beginning of his matchup. Then, on Saturday of that matchup, he left an injured Kyrie Irving in his active roster, and he left Pods Pozemski. He left Pozemski in the game when he had MPJ and OG Anunoby sitting on his bench, willing and healthy to play in that Saturday slate of games. So, Swiper's this being who we always know Swiper to be at this point. Meanwhile, you got Proof, who at least you could say, hey, he's starting to utilize his IL slot. Took long enough, but he's using it now. And even though he's not making many ads, hey, at least he made one ad in week 14. So I can say there's a little bit more urgency that we're seeing from Team Proof. Not a lot, but just a little bit. My point is, with 7 weeks left in the season, if Proof can just consistently lose 6-7, while Swiper, on the other hand, has been losing basically 9-4 lately. If Swiper loses 9-4 and Proof keeps losing 6-7, he doesn't even have to win. If he just loses 6-7, keeps it close, that's 2 games a week Proof can make up.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah! I read you.
Yes. There's a slight chat, so we'll have to watch this play out. But until then,
7.
The countdown continues. From one man's misery to another, let's go ahead and get into the blowout of the week.
I'm speechless. This game was beyond embarrassing. The worst game of the season. They looked awful. You know, they didn't execute. They didn't do anything right.
It's the blowout of the week. Week.
Week 14's blowout of the week belongs to Auburn as they served up a good old-fashioned beatdown to Too Legit. And Auburn, they really controlled this matchup the whole week. The matchup was never even that close. Monday, Auburn led 10-3. Tuesday, led 9-4. Wednesday, 8-5. Thursday, 10-3. Friday, 10-3. Saturday, 9-4. So it never was a matter of if Auburn would win the matchup. It was just by how much would he win. And when matchups are this one-sided, I always like to see if there's a way that the blowout could have been avoided. So you go back, you look at what going into Sunday, what categories were up for grabs. We had the three-point made category. Too Legit led that 74-72. Three-point percentage, Auburn led that 42.1% to 41.8%. Blocks, Auburn, they led that 29-24. And for blocks, it is a little bit of a stretch here because four blocks, that's normally a lot to make up in one day. But I had to give this as a close category because Too Legit does have Chet Holmgren on his roster. So anytime you got a guy that's been averaging 2.6 blocks going into that game, you have to say.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah! I read you.
So yeah, there definitely was still a chance to flip that blocks category. The final category that was up for grab was turnovers. Too Legit had a 5 turnover gap. With 64 turnovers to Auburn's 69. So out of those four categories up for grab, each manager controlled two of them. Auburn controlled the three-point percentage and block categories. Too Legit controlled the three-point made and turnover categories. Of course, we got great management by the five-time champ Auburn. It kind of felt like he went into a strategy to just basically protect his lead. He added Drew Eubanks since Nurkic was a game-time decision for Sunday. And rather than chase the three-point category by kind of sitting on what he had and adding the backup to Nurkic, you can say that it kind of helped him protect the three-point percentage category because he really didn't have anybody that is a known three-point shooter on his squad playing for Sunday. And then, of course, again, the Eubanks ad doubled up as if Nurkic missed the game, which he did end up missing that Sunday's game, Eubanks is a good player to kind of help you protect the block category that you were leading. Either way, Auburn had Miles Turner, Nurkic, both sat out on Sunday. And so we all know Auburn, he's sitting there, he's watching the matchup score. He pulls Eubanks. That allows him to take control of the turnover categories and get the blowout that we're talking about today. For Too Legit, he had a full roster going into Sunday. And it looks like he was probably willing to forfeit turnovers if it meant that he was going to flip the three-point percentage and block categories. And by sacrificing one to gain two categories, he could have avoided this blowout with a 5-8 loss. Unfortunately for Too Legit, everybody basically shit the bed on Sunday. Malcolm Brogdon, in the five games prior to Sunday, he was knocking down 2.4 three-pointers made at 48%. In Duop Reese, previous five games, he was averaging 1 three-pointer made at 42%. And Franz Wagner, yes, he recently came back from injury, but in three games leading up to Sunday, he was shooting 2.7 three-pointers made at 44%. Bad luck, law of averages, call it what you want, but those guys laid an egg on Sunday. Brogdon went 1-for-6 from deep for 17%. Franz went 2-of-7 for 29%. Reith went 1-of-7 for 14%. And that volume just dragged the three-point percentage down for Too Legit, not even giving him a chance to flip it. And if we look at Too Legit kind of over this second quarter of the season, it's been a massive fall. He beat OE in week 8, and that win had him sitting at third. But since then, he hasn't won a matchup. He's gone 24-53-1 for a winning percentage of 31.4% over that 6-week period. And that's basically an average loss of 9-4. And so that really just explains why he's fallen all the way from 3rd to 12th. You can't stay competitive if you're almost getting blown out every damn week. Let's go ahead though and take a look at the big boy stats and Albin's dominant categories. We'll start with field goal percentage at 52% for his squad. That ranks 2nd in week 14. Free throws made, that team knocked down 110 of them, which ranked 4th. 3-pointers made, they hit 73 3-pointers made, and that ranks 2nd. And that's kind of just tough luck for Albin that he lost that category because he went against the guy that ranked 1st in that category in week 14. But either way, we keep moving down the list, and this is an extensive list. 3-point percentage, 41.7%, ranked 2nd. Points, 661, ranked 4th. Offensive rebounds, 56, tied for 4th with Cradle. Defensive rebounds, 177th, ranked 4th. Assists, 148, ranked 4th. Steals, 35 of them, ranked 3rd. And blocks, a massive 30 in that ranked 3rd also. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 categories that Albin dominated and was at least in the top 5 for in week 14. Looking at that, it didn't matter who Albin was playing in week 14. They were likely going to win that matchup with those type of stats and that type of production. For Too Legit, it really wasn't a bad week statistically. He just ran into the buzzsaw that is, that it was, I ain't worried about nothing. And if you look at Too Legit's dominant categories, again, not a bad week. Free throw percentage, 85.7%, ranked 2nd in week 14. 3-pointers made, of course, 81, ranked 1st. 3-point percentage, 39.3, ranked 3rd. Points, 67%, ranked 5th. And blocks, 28, ranked 4th in week 14. Moving to the matchup players of the week from the winning team. There's no point in overthinking this. The guy dropped 73. And of course, I'm talking about Luka the Don. In 4 games, he averaged 42 points, 11.5 rebounds, 11.5 assists, 1.5 steals, and 3.8 3-pointers made at 36% while shooting 50% from the field on 28.3 attempts. Woo! 28.3. That, oh, man. I mean, I know that man's shoulder is sore. But don't feel sorry for Too Legit. I know he had to go up against something, some crazy stat lines, but from his losing team, on the same night that Luka dropped 73, his guy scored 62. And I'm talking about Devin Booker, who also played 4 games in week 14 and also averaged 42 points, just the same as Luka, but averaged 5 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.3 steals, and 3.8 3-pointers made at 50%. While shooting a whopping 64% from the field on 24.3 attempts. That's amazing. That's like he was a center or something. And we know Booker's not just out there dunking the ball. So that was automatic jump shots that he's just knocking down all week on a heater. Really, if I'm Too Legit, I'm getting in Austin Rivers' DMs and like, please talk about how Booker don't score or how his scoring is ugly. Because Booker is on a tear, massive tear right now. But everybody can drop 70, 73, or 62. But we still got guys that make a difference in the league. Let's go ahead, look at the fantasy sleepers. And as always, these are guys that are rostered in 50% or less of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues. Oh, yeah. Y'all know what time it is. We're going to sit back. We're going to relax. And we're going to look at these good, good stats that these fantasy sleepers have been presenting. Because they work hard too. And they deserve to be recognized. Let's go ahead and get to it. Out of Houston, we got Cam Whitmore. He's only rostered in 16% of leagues. His production has fluctuated a lot this season. But right now, he's hot. In 3 games, he averaged 18.3 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 3-pointers made at 41%. Out in LA, Jared Vanderbilt. I can't call him V8 anymore because he changed his number, but he's only rostered in 25% of leagues. And in three games, he averaged 14.3 points, 7 rebounds, and 3.3 steals. We move all the way to the mountains, out of Utah. And Kelly Olynyk is only rostered in 25% of leagues. In three games, he averaged 11.3 points, 5.3 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.3 3-pointers made at 67%. And Olynyk, he just continues to be a guy that just gives you a little bit of everything off the free agency. On the opposite side of the country, out in Washington, we got Marvin Bagley III. He's only rostered in 46% of leagues. Doesn't give you a lot of the peripheral stats, but what he does do, he does it well. And he's been able to do it in limited minutes. In three games, he averaged 14.7 points and 8.7 rebounds while shooting 70% from the field on 6.7 attempts. These shots are not all dunks, but they are all within the paint. So there's a good chance that that field goal percentage sticks. In Cleveland, we got Sam Merrill, the sharpshooter. He continues to be hot. He's only rostered in 12% of leagues. And this makes 2 weeks in a row now that he's been on the fantasy sleeper list. In three games, he averaged 15 points and 4.3 3-pointers made at 50%. In Indiana, we've been talking about him a lot lately. We're looking at Aaron Naismith. He's only rostered in 42% of leagues. In four games, he averaged 16.8 points, 7.6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2.3 3-pointers made at 41%, while shooting 56% from the field on 11.3 field goal attempts. Naismith has been putting together a real productive fantasy season. He's shooting career highs from the field and from beyond the arc. But there can only be one. And I don't know how long this will last, but you gotta go ahead and hop on the train while it's rolling. And we're looking at Harrison Barnes, out in Sacramento, rostered in 47% of leagues. I don't know what's been in that man's cup lately, but he's been a bucket all week. In three games, he averaged 30.3 points, 4.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals, and 5 3-pointers made at 56%, while shooting 55% from the field on 18.3 attempts and 94% from the charity stripe on 5.7 attempts. Harrison Barnes, I don't know how often you'll do this, but you are our fantasy sleeper of the week.
It's your fantasy sleeper of the week.
I'm going to go ahead and wrap this show up. As always, I appreciate you guys hanging out with me, spending some of your day with me, talking about fantasy basketball. On the next episode, I think I'm going to try something a little different, do a little bit of a special episode, see how that goes. But until then, I'm going to go ahead, change it up a little bit. I normally like to have a basketball outtake at the end of my podcast. And lately, I've just been on my talking that talk right now. Actually, that's still what I'm going to do. So I'm going to go ahead, let the man who inspired the song, let Al Davis, take us out of here.
When you have great coaches, then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization, and you tell them one thing. Just win, baby.